Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein's first musical, Oklahoma, opened on Broadway March 31, 1943, marking its 75th anniversary this spring. That show, along with Carousel, South Pacific, The King and I, and The Sound of Music, firmly established Rodgers and Hammerstein at the apex of the great age of the American songbook. The two men had previously written dozens of Broadway shows with other collaborators, but together, they pioneered a new art form, the serious musical play. Their song and dance numbers served to advance the drama and reveal character, a sharp break from the past and the template on which all future musicals would be built. Todd Purdom has now written a portrait of these artistic partners in his new book, Something Wonderful, Rodgers and Hammerstein's Broadway Revolution. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Todd Purdom to the roundtable this morning. Todd, thank you very much for spending time with us.
It's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
What led you to this artistic partnership?
Well, these were the songs that I grew up with as a kid, the soundtracks and the original cast albums that my parents would play. My brother and sister and I all grew up loving musical theater. And so I had written a book for the same publisher 4 years ago about the 1964 Civil Rights Act. Most of my career I've been a political reporter. And I owed them the right of first refusal on the next book. And my wife, who knows I love this topic, said, that's really what you should write about. And they agreed. So it was a happy accident in a way.
So when you go into this, what are you ultimately trying to find out?
Well, I set myself three main goals. The first was to do what I could to explain how they made their shows, how they created the art they created, the process of doing it, how their collaboration worked, and how they came up with these songs and stories that have lasted now, you know, in the case of Oklahoma, for 75 years and seem likely to last another 75 years more. The second goal was to describe how they built their business, because they were also incredibly successful as a commercial enterprise, and part of their secret was that they controlled their own artistic work, and they made sure that they would have that artistic and creative control by guaranteeing that they were their own producers and had the financial control. And then finally, I was interested in their personal relationship, because I was interested and somewhat saddened to learn that while they had this enormously successful and copacetic professional relationship, and they didn't have big creative differences, and they worked smoothly with each other, they weren't personally close. They had very different personalities, and each died not really sure the other had ever truly liked him. And I thought that was extraordinary that they could produce such a combined, you know, 18 years of output with a little bit of, you know, sadness and personal static between them.
So let us talk first about the professional relationship. And what's interesting here is that here are two men who had written dozens of Broadway shows with other people, and then they found each other. When did that just click, and how did it happen?
Well, it happened really because of a kind of a midlife crisis for each of them. Oscar Hammerstein, as you say, had enormous success on Broadway, most notably in 1927 with Jerome Kern and Showboat. But by 1941-42, he'd had a dozen years of disappointing failure in New York and London and some very unhappy years in Hollywood. Richard Rodgers has had more or less unbroken success since 1925 with his partner Larry Hart. But as the 1941-42 rolled around, Hart was falling increasingly prey to the severe alcoholism that had plagued him, and he was really unable and unwilling to work. And he was especially unwilling to work on the project that Rodgers brought him, which was a proposed musical adaptation of a play called Green Grow the Lilacs, which is about which of two guys is going to take a girl to a party, a cowboy or a farmhand. And Larry Hart didn't see this as something he wanted to pursue. So Rodgers, who'd known Hammerstein mostly his whole life since he was a teenager, went to him and asked if he wanted to collaborate. And the two got together, and the rest is history.
Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day.
What was it about the two, and I guess when they realized that it clicked, that it worked, and ultimately with shows like Carousel and South Pacific, King and I, and The Sound of Music, that they were able to do something that was a new art form, really?
Yes, they really kind of invented the serious musical play. Hammerstein had made a big stride with Showboat in 1927, and Richard Rodgers had tackled gritty subjects like Pal Joey, about a heel of a nightclub performer who is a kept man, basically, by a rich woman. So when they got together, they decided they didn't want anything that looked like a conventional musical comedy. They wanted something different. And from the very beginning, the first song they wrote together, Oh, What a Beautiful Morning, which opens Oklahoma.
All the sounds of the earth are like music. All the sounds of the earth are like music. The breeze is so busy, don't miss a tree. And old weeping willow is laughing at me.
They broke every rule in the book. Usually shows would open with a big chorus of dancing girls and boys to help the audience get settled and so forth. They decided to open the show the same way the play had opened, with a woman churning butter on the stage and a cowboy singing off stage in the wings. And that's exactly what they did, and it was received in 1943 as so quiet and naturalistic as to seem like a bomb. And from there they went on continuing to break and bend the rules and rewrite them for all time, in a way.
When you look at a show like Carousel, which has just had a new revival on Broadway that opened earlier, opened on April 12th, what is it about their work that is really in some way being debated today, of that you see this in the reviews of, well, what is this? Because it's different from what we expect a normal Broadway musical to be.
Parts of Carousel are almost like an opera. The score is very rich and deep musically. There's a scene early in Carousel in which the two protagonists, the ne'er-do-well carnival barker, Billy Bigelow, and the mill worker girl, Julie Jordan, that he falls in love with, are really sort of discovering each other, and they're talking to each other, and they're falling in love, but they can't acknowledge it, and they don't want to acknowledge it. So they talk about what would happen if they loved each other, how they would feel, what they would think.
If I loved you, time and again I would try to say, I'd want you to know. If I loved you, words wouldn't come in an easy way. Round in circles I'd go.
And basically, this scene is conducted partly in singing, partly in dialogue with musical underscoring, partly in sung dialogue, almost in the manner of an opera.
Well, anyway, you don't love me. That's what you said, wasn't it?
Yes.
You're a funny kid. Don't remember ever meeting a girl like you. Say, are you trying to get me to marry you?
No.
Well, then what's putting into my head? I wonder what it'd be like.
What?
Nothing. I know what it'd be like. It'd be awful. I can just see myself. Kind of scrawny and pale, picking at my food, and lovesick like any other guy. I'd throw away my sweater and dress up like a dude in a dickie and a collar and a tie. If I loved you, and somehow I can see just exactly.
As we watch it, they fall in love in front of our eyes, and it's a combination of music and words that's really sort of unlike anything that had ever been in a Broadway musical before. Even today, it strikes us as very original, although we've subsequently seen other shows that use these kind of same devices. But it's about a 15-minute scene in which these two people, literally in front of our eyes, fall in love, and we believe it.
If I loved you, words wouldn't come in an easy way. Round in circles I'd go. Longing to tell you, but afraid and shy. I'd let my golden chances
How was their work initially received?
Well, the prospect of their collaboration was regarded with skepticism because of what I said earlier about Hammerstein's string of failures and Rodgers' long work with one other partner. So the advance word of mouth for Oklahoma was pretty pessimistic. They had trouble raising the money. People thought, who wants to see a show that doesn't have dancing girls and, you know, it's not like a tradition, doesn't have any big-name stars. It has a kind of a skimpy budget and basic sets. But the minute it opened, it was a smash hit. It sold out for 4 years. And from that moment on, in the eyes of Hollywood and New York and Broadway, they could do no wrong. So they were quickly recruited to write a movie, State Fair, which they did. Then came Carousel. It was a big hit. It was not the smash hit that Oklahoma had been, but it was a big hit. And then they hit the wall with a kind of experimental musical called Allegro, which was, you know, not a commercial failure, but it was not the success they'd hoped, and for them it counted as a failure. So from then on, they set aside some of their pioneering ways, and they decided to go for showmanship, and that's what produced South Pacific in 1949, and it was just a monster hit of all time.
Todd Purdom is our guest. We are talking about the new book, Something Wonderful, Rodgers and Hammerstein's Broadway Revolution. We talk about Oklahoma. It was their first collaboration. It was a huge hit, and it's marking its 75th anniversary this spring. What did that show tell us about the relationship and about the work that would ultimately come later?
The relationship, their work on Oklahoma?
Yes.
Well, first of all, they had an unusual method of collaboration. They didn't work in the cinematic way that people think of, both guys sitting around a piano banging out the song. They had long story conferences together deciding how to, you know, outline the plot and where the songs would go. But when they got down to working, Hammerstein worked by himself, usually at his farm in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, and Rodgers would work in his Manhattan apartment or his own country house in Connecticut. Hammerstein worked very slowly, painstakingly. It took him forever to come up with the lyrics. Rodgers composed with lightning speed. But they were very compatible. They didn't ever really have any serious disagreements, or if they did, they settled them by deferring to the other's wishes. And it set the pattern for what they would do, which was this close collaboration, but happening kind of on parallel tracks in different places. And I think many composers found that unusual because they preferred to work together around the piano at the same time. And in fact, that's how Rodgers and Hammerstein had largely worked with their other collaborators.
Rodgers, of course, is said to have said that it took him 5.5 hours to compose the entire score of Oklahoma.
Yes, he was asked how much, and he said, do you mean flying time or elapsed time? And he acknowledged that over weeks and months he'd spent thinking about it, plotting it out, and so forth, but that the actual putting pen on paper of writing the songs, he couldn't make it come out to more than about 5.5 hours, which is a pretty extraordinary thing if you think about it.
How does that then work with how Hammerstein worked? Because it seemed obviously the collaboration worked, but the timing was not an issue then.
Well, sometimes Hammerstein would get frustrated. He said he sometimes wanted to throw a brick through the phone when he heard how quickly Rodgers had written a song.
Yeah.
There was one famous example in composing Hello, Young Lovers for The King and I. Hammerstein had spent weeks laboring over this single lyric, and he was so proud of the final result that he sent it to Rodgers by special messenger with instructions to wait for a reply, and no reply came for 4 days. Then on the morning of the fourth day, Rodgers called about some other business, and at the end of the conversation, he said, oh, by the way, I got that lyric. It works fine.
Hello, young lovers, whoever you are, I hope your troubles are few. All my good wishes go with you tonight. I've been in love like you. Be brave, young love.
Hammerstein was so distraught that he poured out his frustrations to their mutual friend, Joshua Logan. And then he abruptly stopped and said, thanks, you've heard, you've understood, you've helped me, and, you know, on we went. So they really presented this unbroken public facade to the world. They didn't let anybody see the strains. But underneath the surface, there were tensions that they had to manage. They knew they had a good thing going, a great thing going, and neither one of them really wanted to risk messing it up.
You mentioned at the beginning of our conversation that they went to their graves not entirely sure that the other really liked one another. So
yeah.
What leads to that? How do you get that impression, and how do you see that manifest itself over the nearly two decades of their partnership?
Well, they would sometimes have hurt feelings, which they'd confess only to other people. When Rogers got wind that Hammerstein had planned a vacation to his home in Jamaica without telling him, he was hurt, and later Hammerstein invited him to come along, but the damage was already done. Hammerstein was sensitive to the fact that PR people sometimes dated the beginning of their professional success to the Garrick Gaieties, which was a show that Richard Rogers had composed in 1925, by which time Hammerstein had already had several shows on Broadway. So Hammerstein sometimes felt he didn't get enough credit and was portrayed as the sort of junior partner in the relationship, while he was in fact 7 years older and the more experienced of the two when they got together. And, you know, indeed, they're known as Rogers and Hammerstein, which is not alphabetical order, and it's not in order of seniority. It's in order of the dominant partner, who in many ways was Richard Rogers.
And it's something like that can, I think, it seems, claw away at you over a long period of time, right?
Yes, I think because they suppressed it and didn't talk about it, I think it gnawed away at them inside. And Stephen Sondheim told me that Dorothy Hammerstein, Oscar's wife, once told him that Hammerstein would sometimes come home from a working session with Rogers so keyed up and so upset that he couldn't even talk to her till he had a drink to unwind. So I think they each suppressed a lot of these feelings, which, you know, did take a toll on them, and probably in some ways took a toll on both their health.
Let us also talk about the nature of their shows, which often dealt with controversial social issues. What led to that? It seems in the book that Hammerstein was the progressive, and certainly devoted much of his life to social justice, although Rogers was liberal as well. So who was the leader in bringing the themes to these shows to the fore?
Well, Hammerstein, as you say, was a passionate liberal advocate and activist. He was involved in things like the integration of baseball. He was a prominent early opponent of Nazism when he was working in Hollywood in the 1930s. But neither guy really went out in search of a controversial social subject to write about. Rogers' grandson, Adam Gettle, once said, it wasn't that they set out to say, let's write a story with a big message in it. It's that they found compelling stories that happened to have these deeper, sometimes social themes and themes of social justice, and because of their skills and eventually because of their reputation and their success, they were able to take on these serious topics, get away with it in the commercial theater in a way that less talented men would not have been able to do. So in some ways, that's what happened, is that their creativity let them explore these deeper themes in ways that perhaps less creative, less talented men wouldn't have been able to do.
Did they have favorite shows that they worked on?
Rogers was frank about saying that Carousel was his favorite show. He thought it went deeper, got more into human nature, was a richer subject.
When you walk through a storm, keep your chin up high and don't be afraid of the dark. At the storm is a golden sky and the sweet silver song of a lark. Walk
I'm not sure Oscar ever confessed that he had a favorite show. I think among the songs he liked the best, though, he was very proud of Oh, What a Beautiful Morning, which is not a conventional Tin Pan Alley song, but a classic folk song. And, in fact, it's sung, you know, as he predicted it would be, in schools and camps, and it's a kind of a universal song. It almost seems like it's always been there.
As evidenced by the Broadway revival of Carousel, it seems unfathomable to think that these shows will not be performed for generations to come.
I think it's almost impossible to imagine that they will not be performed for generations to come. I think it's just almost inconceivable that they won't be performed as long as there are songs to be sung.
The name of the book, Something Wonderful, Rodgers and Hammerstein's Broadway Revolution. The book is published by Henry Holt. Todd Purdom, thank you very much for spending time with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book, Something Wonderful, Rodgers and Hammerstein's Broadway Revolution. The book is published by Holt. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
What?